If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
If the first half of the Donna Adelson trial has showed us how badly Donna Adelson's control over her kids has cracked, the second half is going to show us why it's so hard for children of narcissistic parents to ever break free in the first place. We watched Wendy Adelson take the stand and weave her way through questions with selective memory, caretaking tones, and just enough truth to stay credible. And we watched Robert stand firmer, telling the jury flat out about his mother's manipulation. Two kids, adults, same parent, wildly different ways of coping. And that's the story of so many families who've lived under the thumb of a narcissistic mom or dad. This isn't just about Donna anymore. It's about the ripple effects of her behavior. The kids who still crave that approval. The ones who rebel. The ones who walk away altogether. It's about how loyalty gets twisted into a survival strategy and how betrayal isn't always about dishonesty. Sometimes it's about finally telling the truth. And let's not forget, this is happening on a public stage. Jurors, the media, all of us are watching a family's private dysfunction play out in the service of justice. It's heavy. And it's exactly why I wanted to dig deeper with psychotherapist and author Siobhan Scott, because these patterns don't stop at the courthouse door. They're everywhere, in families, across the country. So let's take this apart. Why do siblings diverge so sharply? And how they respond to a controlling parent? Why does one child carry guilt while the other cuts ties? And most importantly, how do you ever untangle yourself from that lifelong need for approval, even when the stakes are life or death? Let's get into it.
I think there's probably elements of both of that going on. And sometimes memory is very interesting. It's selective. Mm-hmm. And we all, but you're right, with trauma and stress and all that, we can sort of go into a freeze cognitively and forget things. Mm-hmm. So it could be some of both.
That's where it's weird because, yeah, you said she is. She's a smart, educated woman, without a doubt. She's an attorney. She has her stuff together. She's got a good, successful life. So to have that that level of lapse of memory seems a little bit off. But again, if you're on the stand and you didn't have anything to do with this and your family's nuts, I do have some sympathy for Wendy. I could see, you're really in a between a rock and a hard place mm-hmm. here, with not a lot of ways to get out of it. I mean, at this point, you know, what is the best point for Wendy moving forward and trying to escape this family, assuming she doesn't end up with handcuffs on and is arrested in the coming months after this?
Boy, I would advise her to change her name. You know, that's going to be a hard name to disengage from. Mm-hmm. And if I were her, I would be doing everything I possibly could to distance from it, including changing my name.
We see with a lot of MS families and a lot of adult children of narcissists, even when it's recognized that that person is toxic, they are not healthy for you. There's still that inner voice, that inner desire for approval. I think that's in a lot of us, no matter what, no matter how, it doesn't matter what that approval is at the end of the day, we're still going to feel the same way, even from an abusive or domineering parent. Is there still a level here, you think, in the back mind of Donna, maybe even Charlie, of not wanting to not be loyal to others, or especially loyal to mom, by saying too much? Is there a fear of losing that approval deep down that still controls the narrative of what they're willing to say out loud about mom?
Yeah, very much, very much. You know, you're talking a lifetime of programming, a lifetime of needing to keep mom happy and to protect mom from her intense emotions, and feeling like you're, as a child, your survival is dependent on having mom's approval. And so that's something I think that we all carry echoes of our parents into adult life. And sometimes that's wonderful if you have wonderful parents. And sometimes it contributes to anxiety and depression, as a lot of people in therapy. That's why we talk about what was your family like growing up, because that stuff is in there. And I think it becomes part of our brain, actually. So we're left with, how do I continue this process of becoming my own person? And the things that I got from my parent that serve me, I want to hold on to those. But there are a lot of things that I want to let go of. And that's sort of the process of therapy for folks.
How much weight do you think the testimony of Robert and Wendy are going to have on the jury in this case? Obviously, testimony is very powerful. Evidence is even more. But this is not a trial where we're going to go find Donna's DNA on a gun or a knife or something like this. This is a conspiracy trial. Was she involved in conspiring to kill her son-in-law? We saw them both go back and forth with very, very powerful things. This is the one-off. This is the children of Donna herself. One's very evasive. One's very matter of fact. Both gave very damning testimony about mom's control, her reactions to situations. When the conversation came up, Donna just didn't want to talk about it, really acted as if, well, it's not my concern. We're moving on with our life. The grandbabies are here and life is good. How do you think a jury read the testimony of the two kids this round?
I can say if I were on the jury, I would be voting guilty. I mean, I thought that they did a very convincing job of showing the bigger picture and filling in the blanks. And I'll say, before, I had a pretty open mind. I thought, boy, this would be a crazy story if it goes that way. But I was pretty convinced by what they said.
How, and this is kind of broader picture in someone that's watching or listening going, I'm feeling familiar vibes out of the Adelsons. I'm sure there's a lot of people that are like, well, they probably wouldn't kill or didn't kill, or maybe they did. I never knew what happened to that boyfriend or girlfriend back in 98. How do narcissistic parents cultivate that system where children feel like betraying the parent is worse than betraying the truth and have it last all the way into adulthood?
Mm-hmm. It really is this sense of, you know, usually the parents are highly manipulative. They use guilt and shame from the get-go in how they control the kids. And then there's that level of emotionality. And you often see this in the spouse of the primary, the person who's running the show. The spouse becomes very passive. Mm-hmm. And so it's just this behavioral style in everybody in the orbit of, you've got to keep mom calm, because when mom's not calm, it can get really scary and unstable in the family. And so it's just repetition, 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 and it just becomes the norm.
Mm-hmm. And that seems to be the overlying theme with that's what Robert said. That's what Wendy was kind of coaxed into finally admitting to, that when you go against mom's wishes, things get uncomfortable, things yeah. get dicey. And as we learned, her marriage to Dan Markell, she left, but it was more because Charlie and mom and, well, not Robert, but who knows what Harvey was saying, but there was pressure there. And she even said she wouldn't have left him had it not been for that sort of control. When you're in a relationship, or when you, this is kind of like a, as you enter a relationship looking for those red flags, how red of a flag is it when you have a child and a parent, an adult child and a parent, that still seem to have that bond, that no matter what, well, they're really excited about doing this, but you know, mom said this, so I'm gonna do it differently. Mm-hmm. They're still following whatever bizarre, weird, things that don't even pertain to life wishes of the parent. Is that something? I think many will go into a relationship like that and think, well, you know, that'll change with time, and we're together, it'll be just us. Mm-hmm. Does that ever change? Or once that bond, and if you're a 30-some-year-old and you still got that bond with mom or dad, what are the chances of that ever changing into a healthy bond versus that unhealthy enmeshment with your new partner versus your parents that are still doing what they're doing?
Yeah, it depends on how extreme it is. It's certainly a common reason that people come to couples therapy, because let's just say one of the ones that pops into my mind. This mm-hmm. is a case I will never forget. Young couple, they had their first baby, and the wife was so angry because the day that she was in labor and at the hospital to give birth, the mom called and wanted the husband, mom's son, to come over and mow her lawn. And so he actually left his wife in the hospital giving birth, missed the birth of the baby, and went to mow mom's lawn. And he was not seeing that this is not normal and this is not okay. And the wife, of course, was completely upset.
Yeah.
I don't think they stayed together. This has been so many years back, I can't remember. But that was an extreme example of how awful this can get. But a lot of people do come into therapy. And the other pattern that I see is it really becomes an issue over holidays, that the family, the new younger family, has got to spend every holiday, every birthday with the narcissistic mom, or she has a fit. Mm-hmm. And so that causes conflict in the marriage when people want to do other things. The other way it comes up a lot is in when there are grandchildren, the grandparent trying to be over-involved and dictate every little thing about the kids' bedtimes, their dietary habits, and just sort of usurping, you know, yeah. the parents. And so can it get better? It can, but people generally need an outside perspective and somebody to kind of help them make sense of it.
Well, and that's the biggest problem with a relationship like this between like Wendy and Adana or Robert or whoever in Donna is boundaries. And even if you in your mind have those boundaries of mom's not allowed to go change my children's name, yeah. like Donna was starting to do. Mm-hmm. But if you stood up to that, Donna, I'm sure, would flip out and or be very passive aggressive and just make life a living hell. Mm-hmm. And that's where everyone's doing everything to please that narcissist until they realize their lives are miserable. And everybody's wondering why life is miserable. Well, because there's this one person in the corner that seems happy with the chip dip over there. And we're all here on another birthday when we wanted to do all these other things. Mm-hmm. That seems to be very much the world that they were living in. Does that parent, do they ever see the light? Because the children, the adult children can easily, not easily, but they can make those boundaries and say, nope, you know what? We're not doing Christmas together this year. We're going to go on a cruise, or mm-hmm. we're going to do this, or we're going to do that. I know you only got this and you're going to make me feel guilty and this or that, but they can set those boundaries. Mm-hmm. Does the parent, the narcissistic parent, do they ever come back? Do they ever say, you know what? You're right. You should go do those things for yourself. Or is this just kind of something one would have to accept for the rest of their lives of, well, this is how they are. Mm-hmm. Let's not let it affect us. Let's go enjoy our life and not be controlled by their emotions.
Mm-hmm. It's a hard one to do, but that's usually the way it goes, is that the adult kids gain insight. They start to set boundaries. They start to do better. As I mentioned, they often move across the country because that's a good way to set boundaries. They just try to leave. But do the parents get insight? Generally not when they're that extreme. And they, thinking of other faces now, they turn it into a victim story about how their kids aren't appreciating everything that they've done for them. And, you know, woe is me. And so it's really hard to get them. It's always a red flag for me when, even when I meet people socially, let's say it's an older woman, and the first thing she wants to talk about in a social setting is how much she hates her daughter-in-law because the daughter-in-law just doesn't adore her enough. Mm-hmm. And I run into that a lot. And it's talk about red flags. It's like, that's somebody who's over-controlling, over-involved, and has zero insight.
Yeah. And it doesn't seem to ever be, maybe if I changed my actions, they'd want to be closer to me. The victim mentality, which it always has been for a narcissist, is what they go with. They just kind of redirect how it's going and who it's directed to as time goes on. Yeah, I can just picture the conversation in the grocery store. I'm going to guess, here's another thing, and tell me if I'm wrong about this. This might be a red flag too. When you have someone that you know that they have issues with mom or dad, and then you're out in public and one of the friends of mom or dad comes up and says, oh, you're so blessed. You have such a great mom. You have such a great dad. Because they've heard the stories over and over of how they're there for you in this way or that way, even though it's really not. When those stories seem to be overblown, that seems to be another red flag, at least I've witnessed in life with folks where you're so lucky to have those parents like that.
Oh, yeah, that's just nauseating, isn't it? When people validate that.
Yeah.
And it can really make the adult child, it can really be crazy making for them.
Yeah.
How do they determine what's real? And my parents did so much for me. And yet when you sit with them in therapy and start to ask questions about what was the cost? Yes, they paid for your college education, but what was the cost of that? And they can start to get a better perspective on it.
The cost, therapy bills for the rest of your life. That's the cost.
That I can attest that is true in many cases. Yes. The rest of your life, you're working on it. Get that stuff out of your head. It's very hard.
What we've unpacked here is the psychology of loyalty and the grip of control. And in the Adelson trial, you can see it playing out in real time. Wendy's evasions, Robert's bluntness, even Donna's own reactions. They're not just testimony. They're decades of family programming spilling into open court. For jurors, the details of who said what will matter. But the larger story, the dynamic of children trying to both escape and protect their mother at the same time, may weigh just as heavily. Because people get it. They recognize when someone is still dancing for approval. And they recognize when someone has finally walked away. It raises the bigger question, can someone like Donna Adelson ever change? Can a parent who's built a life around control suddenly step back and say, I was wrong? History and psychology say no. What usually changes isn't the parent, but the children. Once they finally learn to set boundaries, sometimes by moving across the country, sometimes by moving emotionally out of reach. And that's the real tragedy here. The Adelson family didn't just fracture under the weight of a murder conspiracy. They fractured because the control was never sustainable. Eventually, kids break away. Eventually, the truth leaks out. And in this case, the consequences are playing out under fluorescent lights in a courtroom packed with reporters. For anyone listening who's ever had to distance themselves from a toxic parent, you recognize the dance, the guilt, the longing for approval, the push-pull of loyalty. And watching the Adelson trial is watching that private pain turned public. As for the jury, they don't need to understand every nuance of psychology. They just need to see the patterns. And the Adelson kids, willingly or not, just showed them plenty. This isn't just a trial about murder. It's a trial about control, about the cost of loyalty, and about how far one family was willing to go to keep mom happy. And if you're Donna Adelson, that's not a story you want told. But here we are. Tell me your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. If you're not there already, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi to find us there. Do the same search on any podcast platform, and we're there too. Press subscribe. Let us know your thoughts in the comments on YouTube. We do greatly appreciate your insight on these cases. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.